I mean, if you have trust and you're focused on the end result, you really don't mind if they work in the morning, in the afternoon, on Sundays, don't work for 2-3 days in a row, because at the end you have a deadline and you have a quality to deliver. If they do, it's fantastic. If they don't, it's not a matter of hours, right?
Hello, grüezi, bonjour. Welcome to Fish in the Boardroom, the podcast where we talk about what we can each do to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion in Swiss leadership. I'm Andrea Ullmann, and I'm your host on this journey. With all the information and all the talk on diversity, do you ever wonder where we really are in Switzerland and where to get started? To help you answer this question, I've put together some resources. If you visit fishintheboardroom.ch, you'll be able to download this tool and sign up to my newsletter to be notified when new episodes are released. Hi, dear listener. Today's conversation in Fish in the Boardroom is with Simona Scarpaleccio. Simona is a passionate diversity advocate. She's a board member at EDGE, a business certification for gender and intersectional equity, as well as for various other companies. Simona is also well known for her role as CEO of IKEA Switzerland, where she led the company to reaching gender equity and equal pay overall, that is also on management level. She's also the author of a book, The Other Half, about creating gender-balanced teams. The book offers a lot of practical advice on how to lead high-performing, diverse teams. And in 2016 and 17, she was co-chair of the high-level panel of the UN for Women Economic Empowerment. Today, I'll talk with Simona about what she sees as being key to creating more diversity in management and how she thinks that part-time should not be a career killer. Welcome to Fish in the Boardroom, Simona.
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me.
With pleasure. So, Simona, you led IKEA Switzerland for 9 years. And it was under your leadership that the company reached gender parity for Switzerland. And in 2015, IKEA Switzerland was the first company worldwide to reach the highest level of gender equality certification from EDGE. Congratulations, first of all, on this great achievement.
Thank you. Actually, it's one of the things that I'm most proud of. And I also multiple times said I didn't want to brag about it. I just wanted to be the first and be an example. And I hoped that more and more companies would join the pack of those who are gender equal.
That's certainly also why you joined EDGE as a board member after your time at IKEA.
Yes. For me, it is also a good way to continue supporting the cause. And EDGE is very rigorous as a methodology, as a global reach. So it makes data reliable and the plans strong and also the acknowledgement universal, let's say.
Great. And so I did a little bit of research to also understand where IKEA was when you started and when you left. And I found that when you joined IKEA Switzerland in 2010, globally IKEA counted 8 women in management positions out of a total of 200. So it's about 4%. And 9 years later, at least for Switzerland, you had acquired the accreditation and there was roughly a 50-50 share of men and women throughout the organization in management, but also overall. And it wasn't just in terms of equity, you also reached equal pay. And so it was a whole set of measures that you put in place. And you were way ahead of the rest of the company as well, of IKEA globally. Now, clearly, you don't reach this if it's not a focus. I mean, it's quite something significant. And so I wonder, why was it so important to you that improvements are made in this area, and how did you do it?
Well, first of all, it's the right thing to do. No, I don't see any reason why women and men should be treated differently. I strongly believe that everyone should be treated fairly. So I had no doubts that I should contribute to that. especially when I saw that the situation was not at all close to equity. I have to say, you mentioned that IKEA globally was not in a situation of equity in the top leadership positions, but it's overall a very nice story because they looked at the data. The global CEO at the time realized that there was this imbalance, so he summoned all the top 200 positions plus the 50 female high potential at the time, and I was one of the lucky ones who was invited. And out of that, with doing workshops and discussions, we carved the first diversity, equity and inclusion strategy for the group. And that made the group advance. Then IKEA Switzerland was the first company to reach parity, but all the others, and they are still working, and I think now the IKEA group is in a very good place. Because, and I go to your question, you need a number of ingredients to make this happen, and in particular, to make it happen in a sustainable way. So that is not that you do it a big effort once, and then you leave it, and then after 2 years, you're back to the previous situation. You need this thing to last. And the ingredients are, first of all, a strong awareness and commitment. Sometimes, with all good intentions, people think it's not our problem, we are in a good place. And then when you look at the data, you realize that there is still much to do. And so you take the commitment to improve. You really mean it. You want to do it. It's not that you just make a generic declaration, but you mean it. And you mean it in a way that you involve your leadership, you set goals. So it's important to measure, because out of measurement, you can set goals. You implement a number of actions that maybe we can talk about these actions. And then you measure again to see the progress. So the first ingredient is awareness and commitment. The second ingredient is, as I said, measurement and action. So do something, not only talk, but really do and measure, because what gets measured gets done. And this is really the key. And the third ingredient is definitely the communication about this within the organization, the communication externally. And these three together make a formidable force of change in the organization, because then you start harvesting all the benefits that come from a gender equal workplace, or from a workplace where there is in general equity. You have a much better reputation as an employer. You have a much better reputation as a brand, because you attract the best talent. So you have a workforce that is really strong, and you mirror your market better, simply because as a company, you represent the diversity that you have in society and in clients. You can understand and serve them better. So there's a lot of good things that have a good impact on the business. So it's also a very smart thing to do, but it is the right thing to do.
So these are the elements for any change process that is in place. And I mean, there's also very concrete measures that you put in place, and you describe a lot of these processes also in your book. And mainly you talk about three big areas to be very concrete about actions. It's actively supporting families, so getting away from supporting women, but supporting families, so broader focus on your intentions. I suppose it's also a piece of communication that you mentioned before, and how you communicate. It's fostering more flexible hours away from presenteeism. And I have a few more questions on this a bit later as well. And also leading by example, so making women more visible. And you brought quite some of these policies into IKEA. And notably, the 2 months paternity leave, part-time work at all levels. And I mean, other companies since IKEA are also bringing this, mainly larger companies. But what I often hear is that these policies are not often used And to reach the parity levels you have reached, and you seem to say that these are key measures that helped you go there. So is it really bringing those policies to the company that made the difference, or is the key somewhere else? How did you make those policies stick?
Well, I believe that the policies are very important. Policies and practices are very important. And they are important exactly in order to make this system sustainable. Because if you only rely on one leader that really wants to make this thing work, as long as this leader is there, you have a short-term view and then you easily go back into the previous situation. Whereas the policy is a document of the organization that stays independently from the leadership. So it's important to have it. And also because having and thinking through a policy, you can definitely make sure that you are fair, that you have taken many aspects into consideration and that they're good for the business as well. On the other end, as you say, sometimes policies are not implemented consistently or on a regular basis. And this is a matter of leadership instead. So in that case, when the policy is there, there are a number of roles. Of course, the CEO of the company, but also the HR director, the diversity manager should be held accountable for what is implemented in their organization. So the combination of the two factors, the structural one, which is the policy, and the leadership piece makes things work more successfully. And if you notice, it's not only for this topic. Any business strategic goal needs structure, policies, plans, and good leadership.
I mean, good leadership, you also talk about that you needed a different kind of leadership to really bring those policies to life. And you talk about result rather than task-oriented leadership. Now, I don't know many managers who wouldn't say that they are result-oriented. They care for what the output is. But when I'm reading you, I'm kind of sensing, well, maybe you mean something a bit different than they do.
Well, I mean exactly what I say. And sometimes I noticed that this result orientation is a nice thing to declare, but is not always the ultimate parameter that is considered by leaders. I have seen, and I've worked for 20 years as an HR director, and then for the other 20 years as a line manager. So I've seen both sides. And many, many, many times I saw in the performance evaluation of people, this highlight how available the person was. This availability, oh, she's always available or he is always available. It's a recurring valued thing. Nothing wrong with that, of course. But if that becomes the make it or break it KPI to advance a person, then you immediately go from result to time, to task. And then there is another factor that was very true. I hope that it is changing because within the many changes that the pandemic brought, also this working from a distance became the normality. But the other thing that I saw, it was always having people close to you physically. You know, you gave input, you decided something over the coffee machine, or you had an idea, you called the people immediately. So that had good and bad effects, of course. Now, with this hybrid work, the winners will be those who can really use this hybrid work for the potential it has. Because it is important also to meet in person, not always, but for certain things is crucial. And leaders have to be able to distinguish between the two. Whereas when people work from a distance, you need to have a different way of leading them because some of them will be super performing and at ease. Some of them will be lost. Some of them will go their own way thinking that, you know, it's right, but they are not connected to the strategy of the company anymore. You need to create a sense of belonging from a distance. So it's a different thing. And here, maybe we go into the gender balance topic from here. And working from a distance was something that was objected. Companies said, oh, it's not possible, it's difficult, how can we trust? I mean, there was a number of topics that were raised. And most of the people who asked to work from remote were women. Now that everybody asks, men and women, I hope this is at least is out of the way. And then, of course, the phenomenon is tackled in a more rational way with people at the center. And how can we make, as leaders, people work at their best, men and women? So this could be also an important and useful support factor to people who work in organizations.
So you say this constant availability as a key element to define a good manager. And you're kind of challenging this assumption and stating that indeed remote, but still, how is a manager to lead if they're not available to their people? I mean, there is this very deep thought. I mean, maybe also from your time at IKEA, there is some flexible time that you claim to have on all levels. Did you take advantage of that flexibility and how did you serve as a role model in that?
Well, I mean, my role was pretty special because no one was checking on my time. I could work 20 hours or 5 hours. Important was what the bottom line of the company was, and how to make it very simple. But I have good examples of people who worked for the company, and especially women who had a family, and some of them really wanted to say, okay, now I'm going for a family and I'm not sure that I will be able. So they were ready to give up, not because they wanted to give up, because they thought it would have been so difficult. So they didn't want to be rejected and to suffer from this push for availability. And then we agreed together a certain amount of hours that they were supposed to work, and maybe with a part-time 60% or something. And they were also in leadership positions. They felt extremely appreciated because of that, which was in fact the truth, because otherwise we would have lost their talent. They were good, really good. So they were even more committed, even more loyal, and they still delivered a very high quality of their project, of the content that they elaborated. I think it was really a win-win solution, because then the company, of course, they were working part-time, so they were earning less, and the money that we saved, we could use for other people, other investments, other projects. So in this fluid environment, the company had the possibility to thrive as well as people. And then when everybody saw that this was something accepted and not discriminating. When I left the company, there were male managers who worked 4 days a week, so with 80% part-time, and did very well also then.
And that's really what you mean when you say that we shouldn't look at part-time as a hindrance to a career, but as an opportunity. And so it's
absolutely. I really see it like that. It's the opportunity to still benefit from the knowledge, the wisdom, the skills of very good people. Because if we say that those who ask for part-time are not committed and are not good, we really miss that wealth. Because of demography, we will lose an enormous amount of people. It's already happening, and in the next 5 years, all the baby boomers will retire. No, it's mathematical. So who will be replacing them? Younger people, and even those who are just starting to work or starting a family, and the world has changed in the meantime. So how can we make this becoming something that is constructive, pleasant, and it's good for everyone? So I think that leaders should really reflect upon that and lead differently. It's compelling, it's not so simple, but it's very interesting and fascinating.
And it probably also has to do more with empowering your team more, right?
Absolutely. It has to do with trust in the first place, And as you say, with empowerment and inspiration. So it's, again, three things. And trust, I mean, trust has to be declined in different ways, because of course there are people who just start working and they don't know it all, of course. So you need to follow up on them more strictly and more frequently while you coach them. Then there are those who are already experienced. And then with those, you just set the stage, agree on the end result, confirm your trust, and you don't micromanage on the way, and they will deliver. So it is really a more complex and much more interesting way to deal with people. So trust is number one. I mean, if you have trust and you are focused on the end result, you really don't mind if they work in the morning, in the afternoon, on Sundays, don't work for 2-3 days in a row, because at the end, you have a deadline and you have a quality to deliver. If they do, it's fantastic. If they don't, it's not a matter of hours, right? They are accountable.
Yeah, and that's the result rather than task-oriented that we talked about before.
Yes, yes. And then, of course, because of this trust, you empower and you hold them accountable. It's not that you just delegate, you do it, and no, you are accountable. So you find the resources. And the last thing is this inspiration. A leader must be much more engaging. So people will be happy to do what they're doing because they know and they understand from their leaders how this will impact the world, independently of what they're doing, how this will impact their company, and how this will impact their lives. So the amount of motivation should be enhanced and brought forward by the leaders with their teams.
And it is certainly more inspirational to work for someone who doesn't feel threatened by you and just really sets the stage and trusts you and doesn't ask when you work, how you work.
I believe that. I believe that, but I do know that everything is intertwined. You are always, as a leader, engaged and involved. You cannot leave your people alone. You cannot abandon them. That's not what I mean with empowering and trusting. You are with them, you're available, you give them the necessary information to support and coach in finding solutions, but you're not telling them what to do from A to Z. First of all, because you don't know. Today is really, you know, it's a teamwork. No, one person does not solve everything. And because we have to go faster, so the team goes faster.
So would you say that the main role of a leader today is being a coach to his team, basically?
Yeah, you can say that. It's a mix. It's not only coaching. I think that a good characteristic for a leader is to understand people and understand situations. So there are situations in which it's important to give a clear line. You have to do this, because there is a crisis, there is an urgency, so you cannot have a debate or a test and try. You know, there are other situations where you need some new ideas and creativity, and then you have to completely, you know, leave it to them, and then you connect the dots afterwards. So the good characteristics of a leader is really being able to understand people and to understand situation. The better you are at doing this, the best results you get.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that maybe, like, under these premises, flexible work is also quite open to smaller companies, but other policies that you're advocating for, like longer paternity leave or these kind of things, for smaller companies must be much more difficult to implement. Do you agree with this, or do you see this differently?
I don't know. How do they do with the military service of the men?
Well, it's 3 weeks.
3 weeks a year for 10 years is 30 weeks, right? Which is less than 20 weeks of maternity leave. But I think that, again, things can be situational. And I have seen many people working in small companies where there was such an harmonious way of dealing with these topics of maternity. Paternity was not even on the agenda, but maternity, that they supported each other. So they waited. It all depends really on the relationship. Now, having paternity leave and maternity leave is a good thing, in my opinion, because it levels up the talent opportunity. Because, of course, if you are a small company and you don't know when a woman will be pregnant and how many children she will have, you don't know, but you can say, you know, to be on the super safe side, I don't hire any woman. Whereas if you have paternity leave as well, then they are even. Then whomever you hire, you know that this can happen. And there are many ways to support that because, you know, the Social Security takes the burden of the maternity leave up to a certain number of weeks. So the complexity of the problem can be solved by regulating it in a way that it is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. But then it's more of a regulatory setting, but it doesn't take away from the challenges that SMEs might have by having those longer leaves due to maternity. I mean, it is almost 3 months, 14 weeks. If you extend too long, 2 months of paternity, it's quite a gap to have in one go, in one setting.
So the regulatory part is important because it has an economic impact. And then if it is well done with that economic saving, you can hire a temporary replacement. Solutions are there if you want to find them. You know, the regulatory part is also important. Now I talk more about Switzerland. If you consider that now there is also an initiative that the lowest income, the second income, is taxed cumulative with the highest, then this is a real disincentive for the lowest income to go and work. So this is an influence, of course. If you change this, then there will be more people that are on the job market and are available to work, adding quality to the job market.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Switzerland there are quite some structural incentives for the status quo to stay. And indeed, that's a big one.
But now the pressure, don't you feel that? I feel that there is a growing pressure towards changing and giving more opportunities to women to go and work.
Yes, and I feel like there's a lot of pressure from women towards men to change things, and men kind of benefit from that or not. I mean, it comes back to my earlier questions about all these policy that are offered to women and to men, but that many men don't take because they don't dare to. But I agree, there's increasing pressure.
Yeah. And then on the men, you raised a very interesting point, because also men have their own bias and they are afraid, they're concerned that they can be stigmatized. So if a man asks for part-time, if a man asks for paternity leave, they might risk in their mind, and that's why we have to have more and more, because then it becomes normal, mainstream. And they might say, okay, now I go and I ask for a part-time, 80%, and work only 4 days a week, and then I will not have a career anymore. At IKEA Switzerland, we showed clearly with marketing director, innovation director, they were part-time, 4 days a week, 1 day a week they were off, they were not reachable unless, you know, you had the disaster, but normally this is not the case. And so this encouraged others to ask and do the same. So it is important also to showcase successes and good deeds, because also men, they have this, they would like to, but they fear that if they devote more time to family, maybe they will be penalized.
And it takes a lot of courage from leadership. I mean, we're kind of going back to what we said before, from leadership to say, well, this person is part-time and I'll give that person a chance to still take that leadership role, and that the team will sort itself out in how they handle the fact that this person is there 3 days a week or only in the mornings. Or,
well, I can tell you the team does. team adapt much faster than the bosses normally.
Okay. I'll come to my last question, which reflects a little bit also on this role of men that we've talked about. And I found it interesting, in an interview I read, you said that you have a son, and growing up in a feminist household, he felt criticized about being a man, more or less. And I've heard that from a number of other people. Many men feel like they're under general suspicion of being evil, repressing women, and misogynistic, even though I think it's society, it's not a male trait. But what would you say to them? What did you say to your son?
So I have three children. They're grown-ups now, but the first two were girls, and the youngest is a young man now. But of course, having two older sisters that were, you know, very passionate, he felt that he should defend himself. And I said, well, what is my guilt? I'm not guilty of anything. And I think he was totally right, because the way we have to approach is data, clean all the emotional dimension of this, because, again, the emotions in this case don't help much. And this was the learning I got from that observation from my son. It's not about women antagonizing men. It's not about a war between women and men. It is about reaching a level of parity and cooperation that helps all. This, in a way, made me propose the topic in this way. So I stand for equity, and I stand for removing the obstacles to women in this case, but I don't stand against men, because people are always in the center, no matter which is their gender.
Great. Thank you very much, Simona.
Thank you.
This was Fish in the Boardroom. I hope this episode inspired you to take action. And if you're willing to share, I'd love to hear what you're putting into place and what challenges you have, whether they're big or small. Each action matters. And to help you get started with your inclusion journey, I put together some selected resources that are relevant in a Swiss context. Visit fishintheboardroom.ch to download this tool and sign up to my newsletter to be notified when new episodes are released. As always, if you enjoy the show, you can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share the episode with colleagues, peers, friends, and family. Fish in the Boardroom is produced by me, Andrea Ullmann. Music is by Patrick Patricios.